Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're going to be talking oil, which is not something that we have really spoken about before on the Market Musings Podcast, but our guest today is very welcome, Pier Paolo Rocco, who is the Managing Director of Brit Energy, which is part of the Metal Energy Group. Pier Paolo, how are you? Good to have you on.
Good afternoon, Mark. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. It's good to have you on. And of course, we have Kenny joining us as well.
Hi, Pier Paolo. I didn't actually realise that you're in Scotland as well, so I think it's actually the first time we've ever had anyone from Scotland out with Alan. What's the guy's name, Mark?
Alan Steele from Yeah.
So you're the second Scottish guest. So welcome on the podcast.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Yep, I'm glad to be here.
Yep, and you're in the oil capital of Scotland, Aberdeen, of course.
Yep, sunny Aberdeen. Not too sunny today.
Sunny Aberdeen. Yeah, it's pretty miserable in the west, but that's the normal for us. It's dry and cold in the east and mild and wet in the west. But no, it's great to have you on the podcast. And what we like to do, Pier Paolo, is we believe that people invest in people, and we like to find out a bit about the directors behind the company. So really, it's an opportunity for you to tell us a bit about yourself and go back as far as you want. You know, you can go back to your childhood, where you were born, where you were brought up, education, you know, how you get into the oil and gas industry, because it looks like you've spent most of your working career in the oil and gas industry. So it's really, the floor's really yours to tell us a bit about yourself. So it's 10-15 minutes of Pier Paolo, and we'll come in when appropriate with comments.
Absolutely splendid. Thank you. Thank you for this. I understand this, and I understand the point of what you guys are doing. So a bit about me. I'll spare you all the details. But yeah, I've come from southern Italy, originally from Naples, but I lived majority of my youth in a small region nearby. You probably wouldn't know the name. It's called Molise. I studied in Naples after my secondary school. I studied at the Naples University, an old-fashioned degree, which is sort of equivalent to an MN at the moment, these days. So as a naval architect, I keep repeating to everybody, I'm an engineer by background, first and foremost an engineer. So my career back, it was a pretty long degree. It was 5 years plus for studies. And with some experimental research and all these lovely things, I turned out to be one of the few in Italy to specialize in, strange enough, in offshore structures. And at the time, I'm talking about late 90s, it was 96, 97, by the way, and it was a very fashionable subject in the oil and gas, of course. So my first few years in professional years, I was working the shipping and shipbuilding industry. So I started as a party consultant for small consulting companies in Naples, working on insurance claims and things like that, which was a great experience because I understand what sort of background I gained out of, what sort of experience I gained out of that. Then I moved into the shipbuilding in northern Italy, in Trieste, a lovely town northeast of Italy. I didn't stay there for long. I was thinking about settling in, I bought a little flat and the like, but then interestingly, an oil and gas company, service company called Saipem, called me. They got the name from university because, like I said, there were very few that did that sort of studies at the time. And straight away over the phone, I was offered a job in London. All right. To work in their branch that was building, large structures, stop building and installing large structures and pipelines and subsea infrastructure in the North Sea. So late 90s, I ended up in London. It was my first abroad experience. I can say one of the very few times I've been abroad by that. So it was pretty interesting. I stayed for a couple of years there. It changed a lot my perspective. And I came back to Milan when I same company, was building a department of naval architects. We were focusing on marine operations and oil and gas installations in all sorts of environment, you know, particularly the, of course, the North Sea harsh environment, but also the much milder West African ones. And of course, we were started talking about deep water. The first project in deep water, you know, was really, you know, that time, you know, late 90s, we see the first deep water installation worldwide, and Saipan was very much at the lead of that market at the time. And I stayed there, probably they're still on the shore now. So yeah, that's how I ended up in the oil and gas industry. So it was not really in the plan. Anyway, since then, here I am. So the it's been a few years now, and after the UK, I ended up in Paris. I've done quite a few years in Africa, in the Middle East, in the Russia area. Yeah, I've done quite a lot of it. So I came back in 2012 in the UK and into the North Sea. And ever since in Aberdeen, with a small parenthesis in London. So yeah, that's where I am now. So I worked, in the last few years, I've been working on a number of, I moved from the offshore, which was my natural environment as a naval architect, to the onshore oil and gas world. And I turned a lot more into, you know, from a construction guy, more into, you know, a bit of a hands-on oil man, if you allow me to say that. So the... Yeah, I developed a bit of a, you know, wider view on oil and gas installation of sort, and you know, quite a few onshore projects in the last few years, and mostly in Europe, but not only that. And so a year and a half ago, I met with Rolf Gerritsen, the CEO of Metro Energy, and we said, well, you know, let's see if there's perhaps we could pursue a future together. So he's playing with the plan. And I thought what it was doing was a good idea. And I said, I think I can fit in that. And here we are today. So it's been, like I said, you know, about 18 months now. I'm just shy of that. Mm-hmm. Been very intense. We've been extremely busy. We looked into a number of, we put together, I think it's a pretty sound and solid plan. We worked a lot on the strategy. And, you know, he listened to my point of view quite, you know, openly. And I think I listened to him as well. So it turned out to be, you know, a quite clear path. What we wanted to do was pretty straightforward. The strategies are sound. We need to, you know, the opportunities seemed to be there. The market was there. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, COVID happened. And as ever, you have to adapt and find opportunities even when things don't go the way you want it to be. I think we have managed to balance the issues, and most importantly, I think we've also managed to capitalize some of the relevant opportunities without being cynical. But you know, it's been tough for everybody, and you know how tough it's been for the oil and gas. It's been, I think out of all the industries, the oil and gas, allow me to say, that has been the most hit. We probably remember when a year ago the oil, the WTI was ended up sub-zero, and at some point, if I remember well, was even something like minus $35 per barrel. So it's been paradoxical, if you allow me. Mm. It's been atrocious. So the very, very tough. The oil and gas is a very resilient industry. So we are used to volatility, we're used to major crises, and we're used to rallies as well. So it's essential that you know, put yourself in a position to capture all this potential upsides. And I think we've done quite well.
Okay.
So far.
Yep. Yeah, we'll go on to Brit Energy in a few minutes there, Pierre Paolo, but it'd be good. I mean, you said you've been all over, you know, Middle East, Russia, Africa. You must have a few stories or a few adventures in some of these places. Any standout moments from your career, or, you know, not successes or any major achievements in some of these projects, or maybe in harsh conditions or, you know, operating conditions that were were not similar to what you would expect in the North Sea?
Thank you for asking. We say what happens in Africa stays in Africa, and the same applies to Russia. Other than that, I work in Russia, of course, but mostly I work in Kazakhstan, which is an interesting country with gigantic oil and gas reserves. And same in Africa, we're talking about degrees of magnitude. To be honest with you, I think of COVID very much all the West African areas. I had the luck to be involved into the most, I believe, at least at the time, the most challenging projects that the oil and gas can meet and every sort, you know. In the late 90s, early 2000s, I was involved in this, deep water, ultra deep water projects, which were at the edge of the, way beyond actually the technology limits at the time. So were the very few. So imagine the risks and the level of investments that involved in this kind of projects. Obviously, there were highly rewarding prospects for the operators, but a size that even the oil industry that they hadn't seen before, and the risks were absolutely outrageous. I've done a few of those, and to be honest with you, the track record that we and the company I was working with at the time, which I mentioned already too many times so far, was a pretty solid. And honestly, it was a time when up to 2006-07, I was working on these sort of projects. Mm-hmm. And you could see oil company, going up and down, and particularly contractors were actually going bankrupt quite regularly for the inability to understand, allocate and capitalize on and manage the risk. So it was a very interesting moment of this industry. We did quite well. I was part of a very good task force at the time in Paris, and we were doing particularly well in this area. We were taking projects, and we were making this project profitable. They gave me an attitude, a can-do attitude, that I think I retained. After that, I was working in the largest offshore development ever. Actually, the largest project ever in Kazakhstan. At the time, the budget was, you wouldn't believe that was $120 billion. So the famous Kashagan project, the super, I think it was the largest oil and gas reserve ever after the, the Saudi Arabic one. So imagine the magnitude of that project. Was a very difficult, challenging project technically, but also you can imagine all the stakeholders involved in a development like that. It was a politically difficult position. So the challenge was amazing. 3 meters of water, entirely freezing, minus 40 in winter, plus 40 in the summer, 100% humidity throughout the year. And we had at some point, we had 5,000 people working offshore, in an offshore environment, in a very sour reservoir with a massive H2S issues with all the, all the consequences of the H2S can generate. And you can imagine how complex was to manage a project of that, or like that. I was involved in one of the packages of this project, but we were all there. It was not a huge team, given the size of the venture. And it was another terrific experience. I stayed about 3.5-4 years on that job.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned it, to be honest, ever since, after these two experiences, I've always worked on projects that demanded, all projects do, of course, demand an element of entrepreneurship and ability to deal with the unforeseen. But these really were very, I think after that, I've seen it all. So then I went back into deep water, I went back into the offshore. Then I started working on offshore projects, but and these were all successful ventures, So I developed, I believe, a skill to deal with difficult situations. The more recent involvement, and I've been given projects particularly difficult, and I would say relatively compromised, and in various terms, you know, technical and commercial. And I've always been employed by my employers in a way as the one that was was there to sort it out somehow, and I can prove a solid track record in that respect as well. I'm somebody that, you know, all this, I do believe I have a track record of solid, measurable successes, and I can prove it. So that's my thing. And like I said, sorting things out, understanding where the, you know, even when the things don't go particularly well, or even when they go terribly bad, there's also a way out, and perhaps even an opportunity. But yeah.
We're taking this can-do attitude over to Brit Energy now. So it may be good, Pierre Palo, if you could give us an asset overview. I mean, I know it's based onshore in the UK, but for maybe listeners that are not familiar with the story, if you can maybe give a high-level overview of the projects within the Brit Energy portfolio.
Yeah, well, this came out of the idea. So we were looking for something that, let's build a business, an oil and gas business, in which Methane Energy is going to be primarily involved, possibly not alone. Obviously, we were thinking we would need some support at some point. But I wanted to grow that business differently. I wanted to make it self-sufficient. So I said, look, let's not invest a fortune from this in the beginning. I've seen a few in the last 5 years, when I started really doing this a little bit more intensively, I've seen a lot of companies that, you know, so-called oil energy startups that, you know, they finance themselves, they give themselves. I'm not speaking about anybody in particular, obviously, but, you know, finance themselves, give salaries to the directors, the executives and the like, and not do much with it. The same company with no assets, you know, with really, really not interesting story, but, you know, kind of managing to finance themselves and somehow squander, you know, invest the money. Like I said, I'm not speaking about anybody in particular. My idea was different. I wanted to see, can I create value before financing the deal? So we really to put money in our pockets to make this happen. And obviously, because the oil and gas is one of the industry with the highest entry barriers for various reasons, well, you know, imagine how difficult that was. So we ended up looking for the deals that were particularly interesting for others. And we had to find value where nobody else could find value. So we looked around. I believe there was a way. So, you know, I don't want to call it, we were looking to distress assets, but clearly turned into distress assets because then COVID happened, and, you know, we had a pretty much, if you allow me to call it that, a distressed industry. Mm-hmm. So yep. We found this opportunity, the sense of opportunity. The group had been on a sale for I don't know how many years. Clearly, they never managed to complete the sale. There were liabilities associated with it. There were unknowns, but it seemed to be right fitting into our strategy. So we thought, well, you know, could this be the starting point for what we want to do? And we said, okay, let's look into this. And there's always a way forward. And we did look into it, and we found some value. Like I said, we also understood the liabilities. I mean, the transaction period took much longer than we would have hoped, because I wouldn't have completed the transaction before having an absolute grasp on all the liabilities and obviously the risk. So we did all that. I'm not in a position to disclose more, but the company at the moment is liability and debt-free. And on the positive side, I would say virtually debt-free. Of course, there is a little bit of current debt, but that's normal. We are funded for what it takes. We got absolutely what we need to now look into the business. And what we've done since we completed the transaction a couple of months ago. So the first 100 days, what we have to do, we have to completely de-risk the business, understand exactly where we are. And we've done that. We aligned all the relationship. We restarted our talks with the UK regulators, and I hope on the right footpath. And we got certified, and the main three ISO, 9001, the 14001, which is the environmental one, and the 45001 ISO, which is the occupational health and safety. And I think that's a unique thing that you wouldn't find in many other companies in our business. So we we put together a really solid management system for the company. Like I keep saying, we have a very good team, we have a solid team. And yes, meanwhile, we have we try to understand better what is the key risk in our industry, which is of course the subsurface risk. So we have a good grasp on the subsurface in all our assets, and we found excellent opportunities in that respect. And we think that we could be at this point now we could really extract some value there.
Okay.
And the great thing is we are an oil and gas company recognized in the UK. And yes, we can now. Our degrees of freedom expand. Now we can do things. We can do more deals. Obviously, always keeping in mind absolute control over risks, and we wouldn't want to stretch ourselves. It's always been my point to walk before we start running. So one thing at a time. I'm not absolutely here to kill it. I want to create a sustainable, solid business that we can and our investors can rely upon for the foreseeable future. We are diversifying as well. It's not only oil and gas we're thinking about, and you've probably seen the latest one. So I think we so far so good. Allow me to touch with it.
I mean, just keeping an eye on Metal NRG and the changes that have happened recently. Obviously, bringing in with Brit Energy, and of course the new venture, if you like, in green space. It looks like a company that is definitely turning a new leaf, let's say, and putting in specific teams such as yourself to take the projects individually and move them on. And I mean, how you've clearly had, Pier Paolo, a long experience in the oil industry. How many years do you think it is?
I did in the oil industry myself.
Yeah, how many years have you been working in this industry?
Oh, well, if you, I would say, 23, 24, 25, certainly more than 20.
Certainly more than 20. Okay, so it's a long time. So you have obviously a lot of experience, but you also have been through many cycles, I suppose, if mining is anything to go by in the oil sector, the cycles that things go through. So you've been through the peaks of like as you approach 2010, then the huge crash back down in sort of mid 14, and a rise again, and of course the recent big drop in oil that was caused by COVID. How do you perceive these sort of peaks and troughs and these trends? And where do you think oil tends to have a bad reputation, but it's not going anywhere for a while? Where do you see the industry heading?
I think that first of all, the oil industry should re-educate itself from internally, and let's I don't want to touch the discussion about. Is CO2 really an issue or not? CO2 is one of the several greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Not by no means the most dangerous, the most it certainly is a factor. Now, blaming the oil industry for that alone is human activity for sure. And anyway, it's a long story. There's many other industries that do much worse than oil and gas, by the way. But that said, the oil and gas should have done better from the beginning. I mean, we I keep saying we never, you know, in the whatever several years and 40, 50 years of intensive oil and gas and exploration and production that we can count on now, we really could have done better in many ways. So the I think all even the majors recognize that, and it's always been an industry that's been criticized and never particularly done. But I can confirm internally, we say we respected a few exceptions. The industry has a strong, you know, background of integrity and technical value. And by the way, human activity, as you say yourself, it's entirely reliant on the industry. So, you know, we can do whatever we want, but we wouldn't be building Tesla without oil and gas.
I suppose what's key as well with the assets in British Energy is that these have been the past producing assets that with modern technology now, you guys are able to, you know, to see reserves of oil that perhaps, you know, 20, 30 years ago, when these were producing, nobody knew were there. So it's an opportunity to extract oil that's, it's always been there, but obviously technology is advancing that far nowadays that it's possible to do all these ground penetrating stuff and get a better assessment of what lies beneath.
Yeah, it's a good point, Kenny. I think what does make a good discovery these days, Pier Paolo? Is it the modern technology that has allowed you to see perhaps what wasn't there in the past?
I think we should look at what we want, you know, what really the objective is. If I can tell you how I see it, for me the objective is to, oil should be the energy, you know, it should be sustainable, right? It should give, it's proven itself as a source of, a dependable source of energy. Many other green source of energy are not as dependable, and that's why we never really, unless we come out with a proper plan, you know, with a proper energy plan, a country level, but not only, of course. And it's not really changing much. We're not really doing much, but we're only creating trouble and add cost into the economy. And by the way, this cost is going to be the parts of our economy hit the most would be the low, you know, the parts that are more in need, and that also applies to developing countries. So we have to understand that oil is to me the first thing. You know, oil matters if you can produce it in an environmentally sensible way, but also it's to be cheap. So I believe, of course, some will argue with me and say, well, you know, cheap oil is not really going to give ground for alternative energies to develop, because obviously all economies will go to the cheap. But we should think, you know, in our development world, I think we should start thinking that countries in view of development, you know, developing countries, they have their own right to grow, if you allow me to say that. And let's bear in mind, if they're out of the several megatons of CO2 in the atmosphere, the vast majority of them were produced and are still produced by the developed countries. So it's a tough argument. It's a tough discussion to be had. For me, we have to look into dependable and environmentally conscious, friendly energy. So I believe the oil and gas can be done like that. I also believe in energy transition, don't get me wrong, but energy transition done properly. If I may speak for myself only, my opinion is that the vast majority of the propositions in the energy transition world are completely immaterial. So we have to think about investments has to be, in that sense, have to be sustainable. Of course, we talk about that, so let's make it really sustainable. And it has to be, you know, feasible, it has to be economical. So if we, you know, I don't see how we could ever develop energy sources which have at the moment no ground to be any of this, not sustainable, not economical. So we really should start looking at this, at the energy market with a proper critical approach and be objective and look where we are. By the way, there's also a behavioral element. So, you know, we like to criticize this and that, but at the end of the day, we also switch our air conditioning on in the summer with windows opened. So there's a lot of things that we should do at various level. I'm surprised that the governments, though, they're not really taking this too seriously. So I still to date I see a lot of, you know, the kind of slogans around, but I haven't seen, and I'm not talking about any country in particular, but I haven't seen a serious, understandable energy strategy in place.
Okay.
In any European country, nor worldwide. So yeah, it's a tough one, but I like to say the oil and gas is here. Our engagement is that we want to work really towards sustainability, and we want to do oil and gas with an absolute view on the environment. And like I say, our environmental certification is proven. So we are looking to do it, you know, in the best possible way, to be honest. And by the way, I keep saying about carbon capture. Carbon capture is not being given the necessary attention so far. It's a technology. It exists. It's material. And by the way, even cost is not as high as you would think. So why don't we consider that? So in power generation plants, there is an opportunity, and not only, you know, also refineries, you know, carbon intensive activities, even cement and the like. So there's an opportunity to capture carbon. Why don't we discuss that as well?
Good point. So the project then that Britain Energy have, what's going on? What's the activities that are planned?
Well, we are, what was it? The plan was to bring, the first thing we had to do, like I said, you know, we talked about risk management and understanding exactly what we're doing here. But then also we had to bring a bit more production. And these days we are finalizing the preparation for the workover of the USB well. And the latest I heard, we should be able to mobilize as towards the end of next week, the coming week. So 5th to 10th of April.
Okay.
And that should, you know, be very much double the production of the USB site.
So this is Wisby number 6. What having is it a wax rework? Is it?
This is exactly. This is the problem with a wax blockage in it. It's a pretty standard operation, to be honest. So we don't foresee any particular issue. Well, of course we're planning it with all the necessary precaution with the attentions required. So I think we have it's all in hand at the moment. So the next week we will start the operation. I expect it to last about a week.
Okay.
So towards mid-April. There's a good chance. I mean, no chance. We are pretty confident we will always be stick back to stream. And by the 1st of May, we have promised the Oil and Gas Authority to issue a field development plan, a new updated field development plan for the Wisby site, which will involve an additional producer. The producer will be obtained by sidetracking one of the existing wells, so that's a significant cost change in relation to that. So it's a very low risk well. We expect a very, very, very high likelihood of success of drilling an economical well. And so this is all ongoing, and provided we get the necessary Lincolnshire Council approval, I expect the well might even drill within the year.
Okay.
And obviously the COVID sort of delay is enabled you guys to look at costs as well. I mean, I think on a previous conversation with Rolf, was it just over $20 a barrel? Is it what you reckon your costs would be to extract?
Yes, we are definitely targeting, in our development plans, we make sure that, you know, our CapEx, OPEX evaluation, also the corresponding plans, we are, you know, well below $20 a barrel. It's not a difficult target at all. So in the onshore world, and if you allow me to say another not too popular thing, the oil and gas UK is focused so much in the offshore because obviously it's been a large resource for the economy in the last few years. But when we talk about, for me, the oil barrel is to be as economical as it can possibly be. And of course, it's onshore where you have the lowest risk and the lowest cost. So small production onshore has been neglected for quite a few years now. For several years. So for me, it's essential that we understand that all these little reserves can be developed economically. And then guess what? Onshore is also much more environmentally friendly than the offshore. It's a much simpler operation. So we think that there would be more opportunities for us. We understand our liabilities and the liability industry, I believe. So the key to unlock growth in this industry is the lifting cost and of course the abandonment cost as well. So it's a very hot subject at the moment with the in the UK. The regulators are very clear on the matter. And, obviously we are working in that respect as well. So, yes, cost control and being on top of your lifting cost, abandonment cost, it's adamant in this industry. And it's definitely the center of our strategy. So producing economic oil. So, yeah, we want to make money with oil prices just above $20 a barrel.
Yeah, that's what shareholders want to hear as well. Yeah, definitely. But all right, well, I think that's probably about 35, 40 minutes we've been talking. Pier Paolo, is there anything, Mark, you want to finish off with?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a good synopsis of your past there, Pier Paolo. As you say, over 20 years, if not 25 years of experience there, I'm sure you wouldn't be getting involved in this project unless you considered it to have significant potential. So, I look forward to keeping tabs and hope this wax rework job that goes well, as you expect it to do, and get the wells on stream, and then looking for further exploration. So it'd be nice to follow the story, but thank you for your time on the podcast to tell us a bit about where you've come from and where you want to go.
Great. Next time I'll tell you about Newton, but it's a bit early now.
Okay.
It's even more.
Okay. Okay.
It's our next target. That's for next year.
Newton, okay, yeah, the Newton, Newton on 10. Yeah,
the Newton field, yeah, Newton on 10.
Yeah, okay. Great, well, thank you very much, Pier Paolo. And,
thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Pier Paolo. Bye. Thank you.
Take care, gentlemen. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.